Welcome to the MMA Roadshow episode number 62.5. It is bonus edition here in Los Angeles. My good friend Simon Head is with me. Cole Coffee back home in Las Vegas, unfortunately, could not join us, but it was a fantastic night. And if there was ever a night for a Brit to be here, it is a night when Michael Bisping is the UFC middleweight champion. Simon, I mean, it just almost sounds weird to say it.
It's surreal. The whole experience has been otherworldly. This is a guy who came in on short notice. I think it's 17 days notice is the actual figure. Got off a film set, walked into the octagon, and knocked out the number 3 pound for pound fighter in the world in as decisive a fashion as you could possibly wish for. And Michael Bisping is one for trash talk. He likes to say a lot in the lead up to fights. He backed up every single word. And I know there are tens of thousands of people back home in the UK nursing sore heads, hangovers, and probably wondering how they're going to get their body clock back in time for Monday. Because they've stayed up late to watch that fight. And
thing aired at like, what, 6 in the morning or something like that?
I think it probably would have been about 6 to 6:30 in the morning that it all finished. And you can bet they would have tuned in for the press conference on YouTube and all that sort of stuff as well. Unbelievable night. Unbelievable night for British sport. And to say we've got a British world champion, it's been a long time coming. And I'll be honest, I didn't know quite when we would get one. We always hoped that Michael Bisping might be the guy.
Maybe that day had come and gone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he'd had multiple opportunities to get title shots in the past, and he'd just fallen short each time. And it was, you know, would he become the nearly man of the UFC, the guy that's had a really good career but never quite won the big one, you know? And he had that fight with Anderson Silva in London. And even after that incredible win in an incredible fight, you know, dramatic scenes in London, the thought after that was, well, even if he gets a title shot and gets smashed by Luke Rockhold, at least he got the fight with Silva, which was the fight that he's been chasing for all these years. Then he gets to fight with Rockhold on short notice, which, against a guy who's already beaten you decisively, isn't the greatest of circumstances. Bisping just embraced the whole thing. You know, it was he really relished the role of being the underdog. Pushed Luke Rockhold's buttons like a master.
Yes, he did.
Master psychologist.
He was under Luke Rockhold's skin, no doubt about it.
And but. Even as a patriotic Brit, which I most certainly am, I couldn't have envisaged him winning the fight like that.
First round knockout.
Yeah.
The guy with no power in his hands.
Yeah. Mr. Pillow Fist, as some of them used to call
him.
Right. You know, some fighters, we spoke in the press room, and this is a guy who some fighters sort of made fun of Bisping striking. You know, he's just a volume striker. He's just a decision fighter. And coming into this fight, normally you'd say Bisping's best chance of victory against anybody is to win a decision.
To out-cardio them.
Because that's his stock in trade. He's one of the fittest guys in the middleweight division. Coming in off a two-week camp, that cardio's probably not going to be there. You know, it might carry him through because he's naturally a fit guy, but not to the level that he normally operates at. So you think, okay, he needs to go hell for leather early on. And at the start of the fight, he didn't. He was quite tentative. He was very calm. And I thought to myself, is he missing his opportunity here? Is he letting Rockhold settle? That's not what... Because you just thought, you need to swarm the guy. And he said, I'm going to run, I'm going to push him up against the fence, and I'm going to smash him. He never really did that. He stood, chucked a few jabs out. Rockhold getting comfortable actually turned out to be his downfall because, you know, it was something that I think you mentioned at the time. Rockhold had zero respect for Bisping's striking power.
No.
Absolute disregard for Bisping's striking power. Decided, right, I can step in on this guy and start to tee myself off my lead jab. And Bisping just cracked him with a left, dropped him. Then he was, as he was getting up, cracked him with another one and then finished him on the mat.
You know, it's funny because obviously my colleague, Fernanda Praches, we usually converse during fights. We're talking during Skype, and her and I were both noting right away, you know, like, Jesus Christ, Luke is showing no regard whatsoever. Just didn't even – I don't want to say didn't seem focused. I mean, did seem focused, but just so relaxed, so calm. hands kind of down a little bit and just walking forward and acting like there was no concern in the world. And I think that's ultimately what cost him. But even I did want to ask you your thoughts at the start of the fight, because when Mike came in to the cage, I really, his body language made me a little bit nervous. You know, the way he entered, he went out of his way to make sure he knew where his family was. It looked like he was looking for his family like three or four different times. I mean, even it was it took him a while to get his shirt off, and he still had his shoes on even after he got checked. And I don't know, he walked in and then he walked in the cage, and you know, I mean, what that last couple of seconds of body language tells you, who knows? But I always like to observe people and see, you know, yep, can I get a read on him or whatever? And he gets in the cage, and, you know, and rightfully so, he's been working a decade to get this title shot. But it really seemed to me like he was just kind of soaking in the moment. And you probably should. I mean, you don't get many opportunities like that, and he's worked so hard to get there. But it just had this weird feeling to me, like, I'm just happy to be here. You know, like, I can't believe I have this, you know, moment. But I didn't feel like the fire and the drive, and the tournament, and it made me a little bit nervous. And then I thought Luke was in complete control of the fight to start with, until he wasn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't look at it quite the same as you. I mean, the way I looked at it was pretty much the way that I viewed Bisping throughout fight week. Normally, he's like a man possessed. He goes into overdrive during the build up. The weigh-in, he's always absolutely like a crazy man, you know, just getting in the face of his opponent. And we had all of that. But the thing with Michael Bisping this week is he just seemed so relaxed. It was as if he wasn't afraid of losing. And I think had he come in off a full 8-week fight camp, he may well have had the weight of the world on his shoulders, because This is a fight that he's wanted for a decade. He's been trying to get this fight for so long, and to have 8 weeks to train, to think about it, to have the enormity of what he's about to do actually sink into his head. I honestly felt that off an 8-week camp, that would have been weighing around his neck like a millstone on fight night. He didn't have that because he didn't have time. He was straight into a 2-week, super quick sort of sharpen up training camp. And then he was in, before he knew what he was doing, he's in the octagon facing Luke Rockhold.
Right.
So
maybe it did work to his advantage.
In some respects, I think it might have done. And what we saw with him walking around the octagon, I think he was just taking it in, thinking, okay, this is what it's all about. Normally you see him, he gets up to the top of the stairs, he screams like a banshee at the crowd.
Right.
And then just paces up and down like some sort of tiger, just waiting for his prey. But it was different this time. He was more relaxed. He was waving at people in the crowd. He, as you said, he was seeking out his family. It was a different Michael Bisping today, but it produced the best result of his career. So
it was incredible. You said something earlier. You said this is a big moment in British sport. I mean, that's, you didn't say combat sports. You didn't say UFC. You said this is a big moment in British sport. I think sometimes as Americans we get a little bit spoiled. Obviously, even in the UFC roster, there's hundreds. I mean, it's, the majority of fighters are from America. We have a big population. Sport is big. I think we get a little bit spoiled sometimes. So help me understand, I guess, how big of a thing this is, what this really means to British sport in whole, and what it means for the UFC in England.
Well, what you've got to bear in mind is the overall sporting landscape of England, right? So the be-all and end-all in our country is soccer. Absolutely hands down.
Right.
Right. And there are various other sports that people like. They like Formula One. They like boxing. They like cricket, tennis, rugby. And mixed martial arts, led by the UFC, has risen up to the point where it's alongside boxing now. But the thing is, we haven't had a household name world champion. If you've got a world champion, the media get interested. And we're at a point now, and we've spoken about TV deals and things on this podcast. I think the first time I was ever on, one of the things we talked about was a TV deal. So I won't bore people by going into all that again. But we're in a position right now where they're about to renegotiate a TV deal, whether it's with BT Sport or whether they go with somebody else.
Hell of a time for that.
Yeah. And all of it, yeah, I mean, James Elliott must be rubbing his hands together
right
now.
Who wants this product?
Yeah, yeah. Let's get back on the, you know, around that negotiating table, shall we? But what it is, we are one good business decision away from the sport exploding in our country. If it gets on either main terrestrial television, such as the BBC or ITV or maybe Channel 4, then all bets are off. Massive viewing audience potential. The best realistic option is Sky Sports, and that might just have been the clincher for Sky to say, "Do you know what? We're gonna put our chips on this and have a go, if they haven't already." Once it gets on that channel, it's then aligned with Premier League football. They've got a 24-hour rolling news channel. Like on you've got ESPN News, and you have Sports Center throughout the day, and you have Fox Sports and all of this. Sky have five Sky Sports channels and a rolling 24-hour news channel. So they have manager press conferences from Premier League soccer. But what they do, they trial all the other sports that they've got. So you can imagine, coming up next, Jose Mourinho talks about his first week on the job as Manchester United manager. But first, we're going to go to Los Angeles, where Michael Bisping just became, or has just done the open workouts ahead of his fight in Los Angeles. And then they can show that. They can show the best bits of the press conference. They can show the best bits of the weigh-ins. And each time they can put a call to action, watch it live on Sky Sports at 1 a.m. or watch it live on, you know, whatever. And even if you're not interested in it, if you're just there for the Jose Mourinho interview that follows, this stuff just goes in by osmosis almost, you know. You become aware of it. And the more you become aware of it, eventually it will start piquing people's interest. And it's like, this Bisping guy is a bit of a character. And, you know, they might think, and we haven't got a British world champion, he could be the guy. I want to watch this guy because he's fighting this really cocky American guy who clearly can't stand him. And Bisping's quite a loud, gobby character anyway when he gets in the press conference. So you're going to have an opinion. Once you watch that, you will have an opinion either way. And once you've got an opinion, that's when the sport's got you. And then once... I don't know anybody who I've actually sat in front of the sport and watched it open-mindedly who's come away and said, that's terrible. They've all said, that is absolutely amazing. Some of them have said, it's a bit violent for me. It's not my cup of tea. But people do turn around and go, this is just the most incredible thing. And you say, well, you should go to an event and actually watch the thing live and in person. Is there one? Yeah, there's one in the O2 in February or whatever.
I bet,
you know,
they'll be having one in Manchester
soon. Whether it's Manchester, to be honest, it's probably more likely to be the O2 if they were going to do it. That's where they seem to do the shows. But Bisping winning has been a breakthrough moment, I believe, or potentially a breakthrough moment. I pointed out a tweet to you in the press room by a man by the name of Dan Rowan. And Dan Rowan is the chief sports reporter for the BBC. He's the guy. So when there's an Olympic doping scandal, he reports on it. When Sepp Blatter from FIFA is getting done for corruption, he's the guy. When England are in the European Championship final in a couple of weeks' time and about to make history, he's the guy. He tweeted out about Michael Bisping and a news story. He probably didn't write the story, but he tweeted it out. And that... on its own is an endorsement of how the sport is breaking through. Manchester United tweeted a good luck message to Michael Bisping before the fight. 7.8 million Twitter followers. After the fight, the official Twitter account of the England national soccer team tweeted out a congratulatory message. They've got millions of followers as well. The sport is breaking through, and it's personally, it's incredibly exciting. I'm also very, very happy for Bisping because he's done a lot of hard yards promoting the sport to a media that hasn't always been that interested. But now they're going to come to him. When he comes back over to the UK to do his little victory media tour that I'm sure that the UFC are already planning, people are going to want to talk to this guy now. And rather than him trying to convince people that what he's doing is worth watching, they're going to want him to just explain stuff. They're going to be interested. And that's a bit of a paradigm shift in the mental state of the British sporting psyche. People are going to be interested. And within a couple of years, we could be looking back at this win and saying, that was the point that the sport really took off. We saw it with Conor McGregor. in Ireland, and you know, the big, the, you know, the huge wave of success and popularity of the sport in Ireland. We could see that on a grander scale, with a larger population in the UK. I really hope that it happens. It's a great opportunity for the UFC. If they can make a few key decisions at the right time, the sport could go really big in the UK.
You mentioned Michael Bisping being a bit of an outspoken individual, which of course he is. You mentioned the rivalry with Luke Rockhold. There's no doubt that this is an ongoing rivalry. They're now one apiece, or 2-1, Michael Bisping, if you count the sparring session that he likes to count. But I do want to ask, I mean, we saw it on full display at the post-fight press conference. There's definitely still animosity. We happened to catch them exchanging each other after the press conference was over as well. Michael Bisping made one mistake. He used a homophobic slur in basically yelling at Luke Rockhold. I've seen some people kind of calling him out on it. I've seen other people say, yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, that was a bit of a misstep, I guess. He knew it right away. He's like, oh, yeah. Shit, I shouldn't have said that, is exactly what he said. What do you think? Do you think he's going to get is he going to have to come forth with an apology for that? Do you think people are going to hold his feet to the fire on that?
I don't know. I mean, tempers were clearly flared at that point, and
frosty beverages were flowing.
Certainly Bisping had two built
at least two,
and yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, what he said was wrong,
right.
And I'm sure. I mean, I know he was reprimanded for it on the spot, so and he knew, so it may be that that's it done. If not, then I'm sure, you know, he's a big boy. He can deal with a situation in the way that he needs to. So I don't see there being a major problem there. But tempers definitely overflowed there. I mean, and the thing was, it all stemmed. Michael actually extended a hand to Luke Rockhold. As Luke went past, he went, "Luke, come on, buddy. Let's just shake the hand." And he didn't say, "Let's squash the beef."
Right.
But he just said, "Come on, buddy." Rockhold flat out refused. Flat out refused and said, and yeah, he's unfortunately Rockhold painted himself into a bit of a corner for this fight. He was so arrogant, isn't the right word to use, but he was borderline. he was treading the line between supreme confidence and arrogance. There was a clear disrespect for Bisping's skills as a fighter. You don't have to like the guy personally, you know, everyone's different, but
if you say he sucks and then you lose to him,
but if you say the guy can't hit and that you're going to finish him in 3 minutes, it's probably best not to get finished in 3 minutes yourself.
Yeah,
right. So it's he set himself up for a fall there big time. Bisping teed it up in all of the press conferences saying, how's it going to feel when I come off a film set on 2 weeks notice and you wake up looking at the lights asking what's happened? I've watched that knockout clip back, and John McCarthy has got Rockhold up against the fence, and Rockhold's like, what? And he said, you got knocked out. He said, no, I didn't. And McCarthy goes, trust me, you did.
Wow.
And you can hear it on the audio of the knockout clip. So forget Mystic Mac. Mystic Mike is the is the new moniker.
Wow.
Michael Bisping called it absolutely spot on. And
stealing, yeah. Conor's shine there.
Yeah.
You silly Brit.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, we've got, you know, Conor's a world champion from Ireland, and Bisping's a world champion from the UK. All of a sudden, it's a bit of a boom time. So I just hope that everything, you know, that it isn't a wasted opportunity.
All right. Last thing I want to ask you on Mike Bisping. You asked me earlier, so now I'm going to turn the tables and ask you. A lot of options on the table. There's a trilogy fight with Luke Rockhold. Certainly, if not now, it could come at some point in time. Chris Weidman is going to be coming back from an injury. There's a Madison Square Garden show where he probably wants to fight. Jacare is the number one contender. He was supposed to be the one that had this fight, but he couldn't take it. Yoel Romero, coming back from suspension, I think he'd be the dark horse candidate, but he's still in the mix for sure. He had earned himself into a title shot as well. So, I've got to assume it's one of those four individuals that's coming up next. So what would you want to see for Michael Bisping's first title defense?
In terms of who he fights, I'm less concerned about who he fights. I just want that fight to happen in the UK. Because if you look at it on a, from a betting point of view, I'm guessing he's probably going to be the underdog against any of those guys.
Yeah.
And if you, and this isn't disrespecting Mike's chances, he's just gone and knocked out Luke Rockhold, but you don't want him to not get the opportunity to defend his belt on home soil. So I think it's imperative you give him that in his first fight. And whether he wins or loses, that's just where the chips fall. But that, for me, is the number one thing. Get that fight in the UK. Manchester would be perfect. He was supposed to fight in Manchester. His build as being from Manchester. He technically isn't from Manchester. He's from a town slightly north of there called Clitheroe. But he... He was supposed to fight in Manchester a few years back, and he had his issue with his detached retina, and he missed out on that fight, and he never had the chance to go back. This would be like the homecoming for him. Go back to the nearest big arena, where it's, you know, close to where he lives. His build as being from Manchester, he could fight in Manchester. The place would be nuts, and that would be just the storybook ending for him. If he won that fight, then whatever happens next happens next. But for me, just put that fight in the UK. More likely it'll be the O2 for business reasons. But if they could do Manchester, that would just be perfect.
I think that would be great. I tend to agree with you there. I think I'd like to see the Jacare fight in England, simply because I don't think that fight sells here in the United States very well. Bisping versus Jacare, I just don't see that being a big draw. And no offense to either man. Bisping is definitely the bigger star, but I just don't – as great as Jacare is, he's fantastic. He just doesn't resonate with the fans right now. There's a language barrier, of course, and maybe an exposure issue as well. I think you still could do Weidman and Rockhold, the fight that was supposed to be. Maybe you could do that as a number one contender fight in New York in Madison Square Garden as like a co-main event, something along those lines. That's the way I'd like to see it work out, the way I think makes the most business sense. But I do love the idea of Michael Bisping fighting in the UK for his first title defense. I think that would be a phenomenal opportunity for the UK market and for the UFC over there. So incredible night, man. It's been an amazing 2016. I feel lucky to have been cage side for both of these moments in Michael Bisping's career. A decade in to his UFC run, he beats Anderson Silva, the fight that he had wanted forever, and after that, seemingly inexplicably, seemingly unpredictably, wins the UFC middleweight title. Big, big stuff for him. And he's still got this big rivalry with Luke Rockhold.
And Luke, I know you're disappointed. What do you think you're going to do from here? What's the conversation you have with the UFC about immediate rematch, or what are you going to say?
I'd love nothing more. You know, I believe I had control of that fight from the beginning, and I just overcommitted, and he caught me. Bisping's a tough dude. I've always said it. You know, he's a warrior. He'll hang in there, but I just – obviously, I didn't respect him enough. I was overcommitting. I tried something I usually normally don't do. I usually don't commit with a jab. I take my time and I work my way in. I got caught. Man, I guess destiny is real, but it's not going to last very long because I will have my belt back. I've dug myself up from the grave before many times that you've seen my losses and what I've done from them. If you check my record, I'm not going anywhere. I'm still on top of this game. I guarantee you give me that rematch, I will put this man away. I will respect him more, but I will put him away, just like I did the first time.
Thank you.
Over here. Luke, I have another question for you as well. You know that people are going to say that you were overconfident going into it, and you just sort of alluded to that a little bit. But in hindsight now, were you discounting Michael's skill set? Since you'd already beaten him, you know?
Man, you know, I knew what he was capable of. I just didn't think that could, but, you know, I know this game is crazy, and it's MMA, and anything can happen. I just got a little over-aggressive and over-committed with my jab, something I don't normally do. If you watch my fights, I don't commit with a jab too much. You know, I wait, I play the game, I read my opponents, and it was just early. I felt like I could see everything he was doing, and for some reason, I wanted to implement a jab more. I was just using it in camp a lot, and I feel like I wanted to try something new and show something new, whereas that's obviously not the best way to carry yourself when you're defending your title. I stick to what I'm, who I am, and stop trying to expand too much, you know, slowly but surely. I feel like I'm still the best in the game, and I will prove that anytime, and I will be back right here with the belt in front of me.
When you defeated Chris Weidman, he had said something to the effect of, he was really frustrated at losing the belt to you in particular.
Try losing it to Michael Bisping.
That's what I was going to ask you. How do you feel?
God, that guy is such a dick. I mean, you show your true colors after a fight, and that fucking guy comes up to me and says, "You know where you are, huh?" Like, I fucking picked you up off the canvas and gave you respect. That guy's a piece of shit, and I want to fucking come kill him next time around. He's just a maggot. Coming to me and saying like that, those are true colors.
Yeah. Michael, I'll bring you up to speed, Michael. I just asked Luke if it stung any extra degree in losing the belt to you, and he has said emphatically, yes, it did.
Well,
I'm curious.
A good man down.
Grab that microphone.
Well, how do you?
I am the champion of the world, people.
How do you feel?
I hate to say, I told you so.
Pick up the mic, Michael. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
Hi, everybody.
How do you feel getting revenge?
I don't know. Some say revenge is sweet. I disagree. I think it's better than sweet. Luke, come on, buddy. When the shoe was on the other foot, I leaned over and thanked you at this moment in time. I said, well done.
Yeah, and I actually picked you up off the canvas. And you, being the dick you are, came up to me and was a bitch about
it. I shook your hand. And you said, I already shook your hand and told me to fuck off, basically.
You asked me, do you know who you are? Do you know where you are, buddy?
Yeah, that's after you. Yeah. Hey, buddy, you got knocked the fuck out. You got knocked out, buddy. Sit down, shut up.
You got lucky.
All right. Real lucky. Bisbee. First round, buddy.
First round.
What an asshole, guys.
I will come back and fucking kill you.
Last question
for okay.
you.
Okay. Hey. How's that jet lag,
You enjoy
buddy?
Your short-lived destiny, my friend.
All right. Yeah, it is my destiny.
Mark my words.
It is my destiny, not your destiny. Dude, see, you're not doing yourself any favors. You're an incredible fighter, Luke. You really are, and I congratulate you for making me step up my game to come at you, you know, but don't be a dick.
Michael, my last question to you is, you know, you believed in it being your destiny. How does it feel to actually finally have that in front of you after chasing it for so many years?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I want to thank everybody that, my family, of course, and people along the way that supported me, the UK crowd, the UFC fans all over the world. You know, I mean, this has been a lifetime's work, and I always felt that I was capable of doing this. You know, and I've had my ups and downs along the way, and I understand why people, you know, didn't believe in me, but because I'd lost some key fights, and I accept that. But I knew deep down inside myself that I could still always do it. And that's why I took this fight on short notice, you know, because as I said leading into it, you know, that defines me. I am a fighter, you know, and, you know, I showed the world, I shocked the world. I was a 10-1 underdog. I got the job done. I do believe it was a knockout in the first round, and I do believe it was a performance of the night bonus time. 50 G's, baby. Thanks, Luke.
For Michael, please. Obviously, coming in on short notice, you said, hey, you know, I do have the energy to go five rounds. I'm fine. But now that it's over, can you give us an honest assessment of, you know, the type of shape you were in going in? And was there any kind of pressure to get this done early?
Yeah, no, seriously, I was in shape to do five rounds. I know now. I've never taken a short notice fight before. I always overtrain, always. And every time I have a camp, I always talk about how I'm not going to overtrain this time. But it matters so much to me that I always overtrain. And my coaches are always telling me, no, don't do anything. And then next morning I go in, they say, what did you do last night? Did you rest? I'm like, well, yeah, but I went on a 5-mile run just nice and easy. And they're like, Jesus Christ. You know, so as soon as I got off the plane from filming that movie, as soon as I got in the gym, I felt so strong. I felt amazing. And my cardio was good. And I was able to go 5 rounds. And then when I was watching Luke, you know, we watched a bit of tape. And every time he does something, he drops his right hand, you know. He was even doing some video on Instagram where he's doing this thing and his right hand drops. You drop your right hand all the time, buddy. So I was like, left hook all day long. The left hook that dropped Anderson, the left hook that won me this motherfucking world belt. Boom. You can call me Left Hook Larry from now on. There you go.
Can you talk about what was going through your mind as the fight was playing out? Because it seemed like he was walking forward and showing you very little respect for your striking.
Yeah, he doesn't have respect. You know, he doesn't have respect for many people, you know. So I think he might have respect now. You know, might have a little bit of respect. We'll see about that. But I always knew I had the punching power. I always knew I was capable of doing this. And, you know, I said, 2 weeks' time. In 2 weeks, how's it going to feel when I walk off a movie set and whoop your ass? And that's what I did. And I do believe in destiny. I do believe in the universe pulling it all together. I've worked my life towards this. I've worked tirelessly.
I've worked very hard. I made a lot of sacrifices. I quit work when I had a wife and two kids and we had no money. We were broke, but she supported me and let me do that. I moved away to another city. I slept in my car. You know, I've made so many sacrifices. I remember sleeping in my car and trying to open the door with this much snow on top of it that had frozen, trying to break my way out of a car to just go train in the morning, you know. So people don't know the road I've been on, you know. So, yeah, I know I'm a loudmouth idiot at times, you know, and I can be a dick. I know I can, but I'm just out here trying to look after my family, look after my children, and give them the best life possible with the only way I know I can. This is what I do. I fight. I don't do anything better in this world than fight. And thanks to everybody that supported me along the way.
And lastly, Mike, I know you'll take some time to enjoy this moment, but of course, when the champs are here, the next question is what's next? You know, you've got Weidman, you've got Jacare. It looks like there'd be some heat in a trilogy fight.
Yeah.
What does seem to make the most sense?
You know what? To be honest, I'm just going to relish the moment. I think I deserve it. 10 years, I never got a title fight, and then I just knocked the bum out in the first round. So, you know, I'm just going to relish this moment. I'm going to ride the crest of this wave. I'm going to have a few drinks. I'm not going to do a Tim Sylvia and walk around with this on constantly. But I do envision the mother of all hangovers coming my way pretty soon. Then after that, once that clears, once I drink some water, maybe take a couple of ibuprofen to get rid of the throbbing in my head. You know, I'll take a look at the landscape and see what's knocking out next.
So big thanks to Simon Head for helping wrap up Michael Bisping's historic win. Now, my man Adam Hill made his debut. It was so successful of a debut, we had to bring him back on the half episode as well, the bonus episode. Adam, first off, hell of a night of fights.
Yeah, it was crazy. And, you know, I saw people right after the event, like, greatest night ever, best card ever. Like, we always hear that. It was good. I think what tied in everything was fight, great fight, huge announcement, great fight, huge announcement. You're like, whoa, what? This whole night is so crazy. I think that added to the appeal and the luster of the night, but certainly the action was really good in the octagon as well. I mean, it was a fun night, and every once in a while you have these, like, I think a lot of times it happens when you're not expecting a whole lot.
Right.
And you see this card and like, okay, you lose Weidman. All right, it's a blowout main event, and then everybody thought Cruz was going to win a decision over Faber. How big is this going to be? And then you see some great action. You're like, wow, wasn't expecting this tonight. And then you get great. UFC 200 is going to stink. It is. We look at it on the card. We're like, wow, look at these fights. We got Brock Lesnar now. We've got Jones, Cormier. I can't wait for any of these. And you just know. You know when you get a card like that, there's no way it can live up to it.
Well, you mentioned the big announcements. I did want to talk to you about that. You said the name Brock Lesnar. First of all, I guess kind of how blown away were you by this? And what do you think? I mean, Brock Lesnar hasn't fought in 4 years. You know, had some difficulties at the tail end of his UFC run. But still, I mean, you and I both know the attention that he's going to get, the media attention that he's going to drive is pretty big. So do you like this? Do you hate it? Is it a freak? What do you think?
It's cool. I mean, I guess that's like the best way you can look at it. Like, okay, Brock Lesnar's fighting. I remember when Brock Lesnar was fighting last time, and we saw at the end of his run, and I know there was the sickness. He doesn't like getting punched.
Right.
So it made sense that he went back to WWE. It didn't make sense that he was talking about going back to the UFC. Now we see he's coming back. Who's he going to fight? I think that's the big question. And I think they've got to do some real selective decision-making here, because if you look at the WWE announcement, they gave him permission for one fight. And who knows what the contract is, if it's actually one fight, if he's really just going to do it once, or supposedly, I don't follow WWE at all, I guess his contract runs for 2 more years. So if they don't want him to do it, he's not going to do it. So if the UFC has one fight, what do you do? I saw people today, you know, Todd Duffy right away. I want a fight. I want this fight.
Right.
Okay, that's interesting. But that's a guy who's going to go punch him in the face. I don't think Brock Lesnar wants that. And if you've got him for one fight, I know everybody's only tuning in for Brock Lesnar. It doesn't matter who he fights.
That's right.
But is that the guy that you want him to be in there with? Or does it not even matter? The rest of the card, it doesn't matter at all. We're just going to watch Brock Lesnar fight. I really don't know what they're going to do. I'm fascinated by it. I'm intrigued by it. But what's going to go in that decision? What do they want? Do they want a huge fight? Does he want a huge fight? People said, well, Fedor. Fedor's got a fight booked.
Right.
Do they take a risk and wait? Say, what happens in that fight?
That's about 2 weeks away, right?
Yeah.
Fabio Maldonado.
Do you not announce anything for Lesnar? Do you hope that you get something done with Fedor? They had years to get something done with Fedor, and they couldn't.
And you're going to try to get it done in 2 weeks.
You're going to get it done in 2 weeks when he has a fight? Like, I just don't know. And again, is that what they want to do? Is that what he wants? What does he want coming back. We don't know. We haven't heard from him, so we don't know.
I saw some fans down under, Australia, New Zealand, that pointed me to an article.
Mark Hunt.
Where Mark Hunt stay had ready. Been told to stay ready.
Yeah.
There's no way Brock Lesnar's no coming back chance. To face Mark Hunt, right?
No chance, because if I'm Brock Lesnar, I'm like, what? Excuse me? Who? No. No. But again, you know, Brock, is it gonna? Could it be motivated beginning of, do you remember Brock Lesnar when he first came in, where he, like, nope, I'll say this.
He was scared.
I was asked, like, what was the weirdest, strangest kind of feeling that you've had covering this sport? And I always point back to Brock Lesnar's debut in the UFC, where he's walking to the cage and all the WWE fans are in there and they're going crazy. And we're just looking around like, what is he going to, does he know what he's doing at all? Like, what is he going to do in there? And he just goes in there, and he's so big and fast and massive, and just, he's crazy. And you're like, wow, this guy is a beast. And then, you know, he got figured out a little bit at the end. You punch him, and he backs down. He's a bully. You know, you beat the bully down, and he's not the same guy anymore. So, I mean, just that, thinking back to what he was at the beginning, you know, is he that motivated, crazy, come in there and just tackle the guy? Because if he stands there and trades punches with Mark Hunt for 30 seconds – it's a disaster.
Right.
But does he go in and do that charge across football tackle thing and take Mark Hunt down? And everybody's like, wow, that's crazy. I mean, maybe it would be. I can't see if he's coming back for one fight. It's against a guy who's going to try to knock his head off.
I can't either.
Because remember, what happened when Alistair Overeem and Cain Velasquez hit him in the face?
Crumbled.
He crumbled.
Yeah.
So he's going to fight Mark Hunt?
I saw Shane Carwin tweet earlier that he'd be interested in taking that rematch.
Can he walk?
Well, I don't know what his health is either.
I mean, I saw that too, and I'm intrigued by it. I saw that name, and I was like, yeah, I'd like to see that. I mean, their fight was really interesting. I don't know what his health status is to get ready in a month. And I know, listen, he was on Twitter kind of bringing it up, so I guess he believes it, but I don't know that I would. And you know, the other thing is, you know, people talk about, you know, who's he going to fight. It's got to. They can't just drag some old fighter off the street and throw him in,
right?
With the new, especially with the new USADA rules and stuff. And we saw Brock Lesnar's name.
Well, now that's an interesting point. What about the whole they got to be tested for 4 months thing?
Right. And so people were talking about it on Twitter that his name popped up on the roster a while ago,
right?
And everybody was like, "Oh, that's just one of those fluky things that happens." Oops. I actually texted some people from USADA in the last couple of weeks to say, is he in the program? What's going on? And they were like, we don't know. So I don't know if they were
being a little playing,
invasive, playing coy, right, or if that was on instruction from the UFC or what was going on. But maybe he's been in the program. We don't know about it. I think that's stuff we're going to find out going forward. And a guy like Shane Carwin, what's the status there? I mean, these are things we don't know, and we're going to probably find out in the next couple of days. But I think everybody was kind of caught off guard in the UFC. You know, I talked to some people around the organization that they have meetings all the time about what's going on, what's happening, what's coming up. And this was never, you know, it was never a thing until like the last day or two.
It's insane.
And it really popped up. There was speculation. We've seen the speculation, but as far as actual, like hard, this is going to happen or this could happen, was just very, very recent.
The other big news announced tonight, Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor 2, is on for UFC 202. We did find out it is going to be at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas.
Are you sure?
Another massive show.
Are you sure about this? Because I actually saw Colin Cowherd tonight at the fights, and he did report September, Mayweather-McGregor, done deal, book your hotel rooms.
Well, maybe they've got both booked.
Okay.
Maybe he's saying, you know, Conor's like, listen, I got to get this UFC thing done first. That'll give me a solid 3 weeks to train for Mayweather.
You're right. And to promote it. And to promote, you know, what could be the biggest fight in history. He's got a couple of weeks. And we know he likes promoting, so that'll be good. This is it's a sore spot for me that I'm joking about because it's, you know.
Because we've all been forced to cover it. I know. We always knew it was bullshit.
I know. It was complete garbage. It was nonsense from the beginning. And people click on every article you write about it, so you have to do it. And it's one of those ugly things about the media that I hate. But, you know, it was so dumb. And I actually, on our website a couple weeks ago, wrote a headline, is the speculation Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather real? And the one-word story, no.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because they demanded that I write a story that day about it, and I said, here's the story. And it was up for about a day, and then one of the higher-ups in the online department said, no, we're not doing this. But I did that. Because I was like, I'm not. It was a protest against our online people saying we have to write these stories. Okay, I'll write the story. If people want to click on it and read the one word no, then that's fine. But it was so stupid. But yeah, we get, you know, we always knew that Connor wanted Nate. It was going to happen. Everything else was just posturing and goofy nonsense. This was what was going to be worked out in the end. And actually, credit to Connor for keeping his name in the media without actually having to do anything. And, you know, the UFC kind of let it happen. They're like, okay, whatever. His name's going to be out there every day. What does it bother us?
Exactly.
Good on him. And yeah. He doesn't want to do press conferences? You don't have to. Because everybody's going to write about this and keep your name out there. And so he's still out there. He's still huge news. And the fight gets made. We heard, you know, we've heard for weeks, August 20th, Las Vegas, McGregor-Diaz, it's going to happen. If you were really paying attention, you knew that. If you weren't, you thought he was going to box Floyd Mayweather for some silly reason. But yeah, the fight gets announced. And
you happy with it? You dig it?
No, but that's what he wanted. Right. And that's what he was going to get. I think it's... You know, I think he should be fighting at featherweight and defending the title or moving on from it. I don't think he should be fighting welterweight fights against Nate Diaz, but he's got power. He wants the fight. It's going to be massive. People are going to love it. So does it matter what I think is good or what I think is right? No, none of us in the media. It matters what people are going to buy. And McGregor wants it. The fans are going to watch it. Nate Diaz got a huge pop.
Right.
People love him. Not a non-needle mover anymore. We know that. He can sell. And so... You know, that it'll be a fun fight, and it'll be really fun press conferences leading up to it, and it's the fight that we expected, and it's what he wanted. And Nate, I think, credit to him, I think held out and said, no, I'm not just going to roll over and take the fight. You're going to pay me my share this time, and it took a while to get done, but it got done, and I'm guessing part of the negotiation we got to slap Dana? I
it has
think,
to be, right?
That's I think that was part of it, because we saw the video go up today, getting deals done, doing business, and it's, you know, Nate slapping Dana right in the head. I think he probably negotiated that into the deal, so good for him.
That's fantastic. And I bet you what, I was told recently UFC 200 is not quite sold out yet, that it's close.
It will be.
It's not quite sold out yet, but I bet 202 sells out almost instantly. I mean, that's a big-ass arena.
I bet 200 T-Mobile sells out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen anything at T-Mobile?
Yeah. Dude, so we went actually Simon Head attended with me. We went to a Harlem Globetrotters game because I knew it was
went to that?
I knew it was the cheapest way I could get in. I got suite tickets for $50. We set the suite for $50.
You know, you want to guess what I paid for floor seats for Guns N' Roses?
What? How much?
It was over $500.
Yeah,
each.
I bet it was awesome.
And by the way, I don't like Guns N' Roses.
You just wanted to be there for opening weekend?
No. Listen.
There was a chick involved.
Exactly. And she wanted to go. I was like, all right. Okay. And we'll go. And, I mean, it was cool. It's just not my thing. Here, I'll tell you what my thing is. We're on the way over here. I don't know if you tell people this. It's 4 o'clock in the morning right now.
Right.
I was on the way over here. I went to Hollywood after fights like I always do in the cards in L.A. And I'm driving. And I come up to Fairfax and Wilshire. And I don't know how many people that just struck a chord with, but to me, I jumped out of my seat. I was like, I'm at Fairfax and Wilshire. That's the corner where Biggie got shot.
Oh.
And so I was like, I got to get out of the car. I got to walk around. And so I did. I just got out of the car and walked around. I like just walked up to the stoplight, looked around. Yeah, it was like, this is insane. So, yeah, that's my thing, not Guns N' Roses. But I saw Guns N' Roses T-Mobile, and it's an amazing arena. Hockey's going to get announced any day. Good for Las Vegas. And UFC 200 is going to be cool there.
Yep. All right. There was some other news. I know we talked about it earlier in the week, and not only are you a fan of sport, you're a fan of media.
Got to bring me down now.
I'm assuming anybody listening to this podcast is well aware of what's happened, but if not, we will read a series of tweets that were tweeted out by leading MMA reporter Ariel Helwani. He said, I was escorted out of the building by Zuffa staff before the main event. Credential taken away, too. Didn't see Bisping realize his dream. My longtime colleagues, EKC, of course, EKC Leiden, and All Elbows, of course, Esther Lynn, were also escorted out of the building with me. Sorry to report no post-fight coverage tonight. I love the sport and this job with all my heart. Did nothing unethical. I reported fight news. That's it. And then told we're banned for life. Does say he hopes cooler heads prevail. Sincerely love every fighter and fan of the sport. You have helped me realize a dream. Thank you. I know this set off a major chord with you, and I wanted to bring you because I didn't even know this was going on. I had no idea. You actually physically witnessed Esther being removed from her cage side position as a photographer, and I know that you were kind of talking a little bit and getting some intel. And as you said, it is 4 o'clock in the morning. I really can honestly say I have no idea what the hell happened. I did ask about it at the post-event press conference, just asking Dave Schaller. I saw some tweets. He politely kind of declined my request at a statement. But give me your thoughts, because I know this has struck a chord with you.
Yeah, first of all, I'm glad that you asked, because I was going to, and it wouldn't have been as eloquent. I was very, very angry. It just strikes me that, you know, as somebody, you know, with a who's been around journalism, who's studied journalism, and actually has a passion for it. I know a lot of people that cover the sport really don't have the background. You know, a lot of people are just bloggers, which is great, but I don't think they understand, you know, how important journalism is and the, you know, the ability to do your job and to report. I might veer off here because, like I said, it is very angry to me. But I what I saw people saying today was, all right, so Ariel reported, basically Ariel wrote at about 5 o'clock that Lesnar and the UFC were nearing a deal. It could be completed soon. And by the way, I know how he writes. That means it was done. He just doesn't like to come out and say that, because you never know, things could fall through. But nearing a deal is almost done. And that annoyed the UFC, because they had their big unveiling of the promo tonight, and I don't think they wanted that out there. Now, what they will say is that Ariel put the story out without requesting a comment. And I'll tell you, he should have. He should have absolutely gone to them, requested a comment, but they would have given him no comment. We already know that. But as a journalist, he should have done that. He didn't, and they used that as the reason they did what they did. And said, as a, you know, if he was a professional and went through professional courtesy and asked us for a comment, it would have been different. I don't think it would have. Honestly, I think it's an excuse. I think they're lying, but that is what they said, and to be fair, they're right. From a strictly journalism standpoint, you should have. Now, I have also seen people say, hey, the UFC has a right to unveil news the way they want to. That's completely stupid.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's ignorant, and I'll tell you that it's not about unveiling fight news. It's a bigger picture thing. If you think that, I think that's stupid and ignorant, but whatever. That's your prerogative to think that way. But in the end, it when you're stifling what journalists do and doing their job, and then down the road, somebody is scared to report, oh, they are covering up some safety issue, some health concern of somebody. Oh, I better not write this, because I'm never going to get to cover this again. And there's certain people, like, I don't really have a fear of that repercussion. I'm sure it could happen to me. If it happens to Ariel, it'll happen to anybody. My outlet will stand behind me and go to bat, and the UFC actually cares what my outlet does, because right. It's the major newspaper in the UFC's market, and they actually care. And I think that my outlet would back me up, and I wouldn't be fearful, because I know I wouldn't get fired if I, you know, if something like that happened. I would just get reassigned, do something else. I would report something like that. But if somebody who doesn't have that huge outlet behind them, somebody just happens to come across a huge story that really could be important to somebody's safety, somebody's health, anything like that. And again, it could be anything. I'm just using examples. And they're scared to report that because they don't have the backing of somebody that could help them out. And they're like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to report this because I know what could happen to me. I could never be able to cover the event again. I could never be allowed in. I won't be able to do my job. I can't make a living. That's what you're creating when you do these kind of things. And so when you say it's just a fight announcement, they wanted to announce it their way, that's fine, but you're not looking at the bigger picture at all. And maybe you're sitting at home, maybe you're a fan, and you're like, I don't care if a safety, whatever. If somebody's going to get hurt or there's some big scandal or something like that, what do I care? Like, I guess that's fine, but that's – you're really being short-sighted and narrow-minded in that. And it's the concept of people being able to do their job. And listen, the UFC can do whatever they want. They can kick anybody they want out. And guess what? Ariel can still – cover the sport great without being there.
Yep.
But it's the down the road. It's, you know, blogger X is covering the sport and you know, has that big thing, and maybe he can't do it because of this, and he's scared of repercussions and everything. It's so annoying to me, and it made me so mad. And I didn't even know what to do tonight. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be at the press conference. I thought I should leave. I thought everybody should leave, to be honest. But at the same time, we all have jobs, and you know, I was sent here to do a job, and I decided to do it. And I think in the end it was the right thing, because if I would have left, who cares?
Right.
I mean, honestly, in the end, who cares? Like, okay, you don't read your, you know, your post-press conference story in my outlet, and it doesn't matter. I think there needs to be more of an issue raised than just saying, okay, we're going to walk out. And I saw people say, why doesn't everybody walk out? And I think that's – it was thought about, and I wanted to, but I think that's why. And I think there's better ways to go about it, and I think – making sure people are aware of the importance of why it does matter. Why, again, if you think, oh, Ariel shouldn't have broke this story because it was a fight announcement that they wanted to make themselves, and that's beside the point. It's so missing the issue of what's going on here.
I guess I'm really hoping to hear more details from both sides, which I'm hoping we will. Like I said, I'm still kind of in the dark about it. I mean, I'm learning about it, but before we make a decision or make a decision, what to do. But you bring up a lot of interesting points, and I guess I saw a lot of people on my own Twitter timeline saying, you guys better stick up, you guys better have his back, and that sort of thing. And again, I do want to know all the details before I decide to throw my support one way or the other, but what do you feel like? I mean, as journalists, we don't have an association. We don't have a body to speak for us. I mean, do you think there is responsibility for people to stand up and back each other?
Yeah, I do. I do, and that's why, because some people don't have anything. Again, you know, I think there's people out there that are covering the sport in a certain way. You know, again, I have the newspaper. I have that. You have a major outlet behind you that would most likely stand up for you, but the littler guys, who's going to stand up for them? And I think it's happened too often. This is not a isolated thing. The UFC has done this many times. We saw a list all over Twitter of people that have been banned for various different reasons, and the UFC would say, well, they're not banned, they just weren't credentialed for future events, which would be a ban. But again, I guess in the end they're right. You weren't officially banned, but you can apply for a credential. We can just deny it, because we can deny anybody's credential request at any time. So if you say, because I know they're going to come out and say, we've never banned anyone, we just don't credential them. Okay, I get it. But yeah, I think it is important for everybody to kind of do it. I know, in the past, other people have been banned or been not credentialed, and we, we had media people just kind of not caring or not paying attention because it was, bloggers, whoever it was, and nobody really cared. And in the end, guess what? By the way, Ariel gets banned from future events. It's good for me. It's good for you. But it's really not in the big picture. I mean,
right.
He gets less access.
That's a short-sighted way to look at it.
Completely. And so, I think it'd be easy for some people to look at it that way and say, all right, well, he's gone. Maybe I get some of the, some of the stories.
Less competition.
Yeah, I think it's gross. I don't think that's right. I don't know what the right thing to do is. I think something should be done. I think, we at least need to, like I said, I think for right now, the best thing to do is to make sure people are aware and why it's important. Because all these people today that came out and said, it's just about how they want to make their announcements. It's not. It is not that. And don't look at it that way. It's about restricting your ability to do your job. And that's what it is. And, in some point, it's going to be a bigger story. And at some point, somebody's going to be fearful of reporting what they know or reporting the truth or saying something because they're scared of losing their job or not being able to do their job anymore. And I don't know. I want to express it better, but I really am. It really is something that makes me very emotional, very angry, just to see what happened. Because it could happen to anybody.
I think you said it well, man. It's crazy because it was such a good night in terms of the UFC. And then that's, then you have this story that's going to take a lot of attention. It's going to take a lot of attention.
I hope so. I hope it does. And again, I want to talk about the fights, but, and there's great fights. There's great things. The Bisping story is awesome. It's awesome. But I think bigger picture, people need to pay attention and know what happened and understand what happened and let it be known that it's not acceptable. It's not.
All right. And thanks, David. Obviously, it was a great night. One kind of bad note. We did hear about a handful of media members getting escorted out towards the end of the night. Can you give us any insight as to what happened there, and is there any statement from the UFC?
No, I appreciate the question, John. Out of respect to all the parties that were involved in that conversation, I'm not going to delve into the details.
It'll be interesting to see where we go from here. All right, well, before you get out of here, I know it is getting late in the night or early in the morning, depending on how you look at it. You mentioned the fights. We've talked about the main event, but is there any other thing that's going to be one of your lasting impressions of the evening? Is there one of the things that stood out? Because there really were so many damn good fights tonight.
There was, and I'll say this, and I didn't get a chance to do it on the video that we did on our site after the fights, but I did want to point out, I really, really hope that we just watched Dan Henderson walk off on an awesome note.
Right.
Like, that was cool. Don't fight again.
Don't go in there. And
it's one of those things. Like, it's not our job to tell people when to walk away, when to quit, but it hasn't been great for him. It hasn't been a good run. He's taken a lot of damage. He took damage tonight. He almost lost.
Yeah.
And, wow, I mean, credit to him for being so tough, but how much more do you want to see him do that? And what better way to end your career than like a highlight knockout and a great back and forth fight where both guys were in trouble, both guys threw big shots, contract is over. I would hope that the UFC says to him, you know what, we want you to fight, but we're not really, we don't want to make it too enticing for you. If you want to fight, we'll let you, but listen, we're not going to give you this huge deal because we don't want you to be intrigued to, or you know, intrigued enough or interested enough to sign. And I really hope that, because I know that if they didn't, another organization would step up. But I just say, like, listen, Dan, that's the way to go out, man.
I would agree. Simon Head actually texted me right after the fight was over and was like, dude, he should hang it up right now. And I agree. I think this would have been one of those ones. And it's nice that he at least mentioned it, but I wish he could have gone through, like, the official ceremony. I mean, seeing Mark Munoz hang it up in Manila was, like, amazing, yeah. The response that he received. And there have been a couple times, and Simon and I talked about it earlier tonight on his Facebook Live recap, but, like, when Nogueira knocked out Schaub in Brazil, it would have been amazing if he'd have walked away at that point. When Vanderlei beat Brian Stann in Saitama, it would have been amazing if he'd have hung it up at that point, you know? And, you hate to be the guy to force somebody into retirement, but you're right. What, I mean, guy's got nothing else to prove.
And I'll say on Henderson, you know, he said this week, how long, every interview we've done with him for like 6 years, hey, is this it? You're going to retire? Are you getting close? And it's always no, no, no. And this week, he was like, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about it. It's the last fight on my contract. I'm considering it. And I asked him specifically, I said, is it going to be performance that determines? Like, if you come out and have a great performance, that means you're going to keep going? Or what's it going to – he said, no, absolutely not. The performance has nothing to do with what I do going forward. It's just going to be about what, you know, how I feel, what contract I'm offered. So I think that's a good sign that he – I think he was acknowledging that just because he has a good win doesn't mean he's going to come back. I would just love to see – that is a perfect way to walk off. And, you know, he comes back and fights one more time and gets knocked out and then, all right, now I'm done, like – It just
it's not the same.
It just soils your memory for a long time. And on the other hand, if he walks away with a win 3 years from now, he's 48, and he's like, yeah, you know what? That felt good. I think I can do that again. I hope that's not the case either. I just accept that you had an awesome career, an awesome conclusion to it. He's not going to win a title. That's like the last, you know, to win a title at this point would be this huge thing, but he's not going to do it. So what else are you trying to accomplish? Go like 2-4 in your next 6 fights, or maybe I can go 3-3 in my next 6. Like, just walk away.
You think Daniel will give him the job he's looking for, an ambassador gig?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be. Listen, he's an Olympian. He's done so much for the sport. He's been around. He's been to like every organization. He knows a lot of people. Seems to be a pretty good dude. Like, I think it would be. It would be nice. At some point, they're going to run out of jobs, I think.
I know, right? I do wonder how many
people everybody's getting a job. I want to be an ambassador of something at some point. I don't think there's any spots for me. No, but I think, not if they listen to this podcast. I'm not going to get it. But, yeah, I mean, I think you know, he's one of those guys that he's put in enough. I think that he's probably deserving.
Your prediction real quick for the featherweight division. Max Holloway looked phenomenal in beating Ricardo Lamas. He's got to be the number one contender, right? With Conor fighting again at 170, I don't think he's going back.
Wait, the number one contender to the interim title?
That's right. The number one contender.
Because
so I'm assuming the Aldo Edgar winner is eventually going to just be granted undisputed title status because I don't think Conor wants to go back to 145.
I don't think he does either, but I also don't think he let it go.
Yeah? You think you make him go back?
And there's a lot of I have no idea what's going on with it's a very weird situation, but I think that at some point, Conor might say, it's a really tough cut for me, but I am the champion, and I'm going to go defend the belt. I think it's something that's inside of him, because what if he doesn't get it at 55? I think he really likes having the belt.
You think a win or a loss in the rematch helps determine that?
What would it matter if he wins?
I don't know. That's what I'm wondering. If he wins, he's like, maybe I go to 55. Like, I got my mojo back. I got my swagger back. If he loses, like, I wonder if you kind of go back with your tail tucked between your legs and be like, I was always a featherweight anyway.
Yeah, maybe. I just feel like at some point, there's going to be all the talk. You know, the other thing that could determine it is those guys at 45, there is a lot to sell there in that division of – you could fight Aldo again, which we have the bit. He could fight Edgar if he wins. I mean, there's a lot built up there. That's a pretty big name, former champion, and you know, trying to unify the interim and the regular title. But how marketable is Dos Anjos fight if he's already got up to 170? It was okay. Then go back to 55. Dos Anjos is nothing. I mean, as far as marketability, he's really nothing.
You're right.
The 45 pound guys.
The bigger fight's probably the 45 right now.
Right. So the 45 pound guys are the bigger fight for him. But he, again, he's like similar to Brock Lesnar in that it doesn't really matter who he's fighting. It's just all about Conor. But I think that if he's looking at the bottom line, the bigger fights seem to be at 145 right now, unless somebody else can come in and take the title and, you know, make it interesting at 55. But I don't see it. I think Dos Anjos keeps the title, and then I think 45 becomes the spot to come back to if he can make it. I think part of why he wanted to go up was because he really doesn't like making it, really has a tough time making it. So if he thinks in his mind he can, I think that's probably the better place for him. But who knows what he's – you never know what that guy's thinking.
You really don't.
Really, I mean, no matter what he says, you never know what he's actually thinking. Who knows what he does?
Master manipulator, that's for sure. All right, well, it's nearing 5 a.m., so I'll let you sneak out of here. Any other last thoughts, messages from your first week on the MMA Roadshow, the first of many, because you've just been, again, until I have to actually turn the podcast over to you because you're better at me than.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I feel like I've really gone downhill from the other day. Maybe I needed to have a couple drinks first. The one in the bar was a better setting for me, but I appreciate coming on. I think it's really cool. I look forward to doing more in the future, and UFC 200 is right around the corner, and I was talking about it today. Like, the card of UFC 200 is insane, but the other two cards that week are really good. Like, I would actually be looking forward to those cards even if it wasn't, you know, the UFC 200 week. So I just think with that coming up, I mean, we're even looking past, you know, a couple of really good cards before then, but that week is going to be ridiculously good, and I honestly can't wait for that.
I can't either. All right, we'll let you slip out of here while we reset. Listen to Dan Henderson. Henderson as he contemplates his future. And for Dan Henderson, quickly, just A, can you talk about kind of what you remember from that opening round and you know, how hurt you were and what was just going through your head at that point?
Yeah, I mean, it's always nicer to not to get hurt in that round. I know that I felt like I hurt him a little bit and came in and he popped me. Next thing I know, I was on the ground. But, I mean, I was aware the whole time on the ground. Obviously, I said, shit. So, you know, I just knew I needed to recover and you know, tried to get back up. And he kept on me. And, you know, I just he didn't hurt me to where I was not knowing what was going on. But he had me in trouble for a while. And, you know, the second time I went down, you know, I feel like I remember being on my hand still. And he threw a knee on my head and knocked me down again. And I just decided to hold on to him and recover and, you know, start in round two.
And you've always kind of brushed off the retirement questions, but this is the first time you've really admitted, hey, maybe this is it. Can you talk to us about how you'll reach that decision, what the process will be for you to make a choice?
You know, I don't like Uriah said, I don't want to make any decisions emotionally, but, you know, knowing that in my mind there's a possibility that that might have been the last one, it was obviously a good one to have. That and all my kids and everybody were able to come, so yeah, it was a little more emotional, but yeah, I don't know, it all depends on what my options are afterwards. Obviously, I'm going to need a paycheck for a little while, but we'll see what happens.
I'm just curious, we're way past, years and years past you having anything to prove, right? Like you were a Hall of Famer from your accomplishments a long, long time ago, yet you fought on and you've continued to win. Just curious, what makes it hard for a great athlete like yourself to walk away? Is it the love you get from the crowd like you got tonight? Is it knowing that you can still go out there and beat anybody in the world any given night? Is it financial? Like what makes it hard to stop being an athlete? Is it an identity thing? Because again, you have nothing to prove and you haven't for a long time. Is it just that you love it so much? What would you say?
Yeah, it's never been an identity thing. It obviously the money helps. I love doing this, though, and I love getting paid to do it. And, you know, for me, I think it's along the way been more about the challenge. And every opponent I get, it's a different challenge, and sometimes bigger, sometimes they're just different. And, yeah, I feel like as I've gotten older, it's a different type of challenge. You know, I'm kind of challenging myself with my opponent and time as well. You know, I'm definitely older than, well, I guess for a while I've been the oldest guy in the UFC, but older than the average guy fighting for sure. but I feel good. I feel like I'm still capable of competing with the top guys. You know, it's more about what, you know, the other things I want to do in life and spending time with the kids, and I've managed to do that just fine along the way. But, you know, I'm getting close to being ready to being done and being okay with it. I've been okay with it for a while. If I look back and what I've done, I'm completely okay with it, and you know, feel good about myself as well. And you know, but we'll see. I'm not making any decisions now. I'm just going to wait and see what happens and see what my options are.
So many things to talk about at UFC 199. I swear we could continue going on all night long. But the co-main event, another big rivalry fight there, of course. UFC bantamweight champion Dominick Cruz and Uriah Faber, his longtime nemesis, meeting for the third time in the cage. It was Dominick Cruz who was just a cut above all night long, just seemed a step ahead of Uriah Faber. And, you know, I thought Uriah actually looked very good, to be honest with you. I thought he looked very competitive. Even at his advanced age, as long as he's been in the game, it doesn't seem to me like he's lost a step. It doesn't seem to me that he's necessarily deficient in anything. It's just the fact that Dominick Cruz is so damn good. I think it's easy to disrespect him. A lot of people don't like his attitude. And, of course, the fact that he was out for so long certainly took a hit to his reputation. But the guy is one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. It's incredible. And he put on another fantastic performance tonight. Looked a little sluggish to me in the opening round, I'm not going to lie. Just a little bit unsettled. It kind of appeared to be fatiguing early. Didn't seem to have that rhythm set just right. I thought the opening round was a bit of a struggle for Dominick Cruz. I definitely gave it to him. I had him winning the fight 50-45, but I thought it was a little bit of a struggle for him. But yet he you know, seemed to right the ship and seemed to get stronger as time wore on, which was incredible to watch. The guy really is a phenomenal athlete, and just, I find it fun to watch, man. His style is crazy, that herky-jerky motion that he has everywhere, the you know, holding the hands low, moving the head. I think he's a pleasure to watch. I enjoy hearing him on the microphone. Again, I know some people aren't big fans of his attitude, but I think he does a phenomenal job. Uriah Faber, in a losing effort, again, to me, doesn't lose a lot of respect. I thought he looked great. Did mention that maybe he might be thinking about hanging up. It's funny because talking to him earlier in the week, he excuse me, kind of brushed that off, made it seem like, nah, there's no way we're gonna do anything like that. You know, it's I'm at the top of the game and I'm gonna continue to be at the top of the game. But kind of admitted post fight, he's not gonna rush to make a decision, but it might actually be the last time we see Uriah Faber. Now, he did mention the possibility of a return to featherweight. He did also mention the possibility of perhaps fighting in Sacramento. They have a new arena that's being constructed there that he'd love to fight there as well. So certainly some opportunities. I think Uriah Faber is probably at that point in his career where it's about big fights. It's about big opportunities. I don't think he necessarily needs to fight just to fight. But in the right situation, he'll certainly pick up some fights. And the guy still gets incredible fan support. California Love came on the speakers, and it was a massive welcome for him here in Los Angeles. Meanwhile, Dominick Cruz didn't quite bury the hatchet. it seemed like these two guys might get over it a little bit, might put the rivalry behind them, but they still like to stick needles at each other when they can. Interesting to hear them kind of reflect at the post-fight press conference on their relationship and where they are and where their rivalry and what it means. But I think they're going to be fighting for a long time to come. Danny Castillo, Team Alpha Male Wrestling coach, of course, former UFC vet, came by afterwards and said, listen, man, we've got three or four more guys in the pipeline that are coming right behind them. You know, of course, Cody Garbrandt is the head name on that charge right now, but they said, you know, they've got a handful of other guys that could challenge for the title as well. So I think we're going to see a continuation of the Team Alpha Male versus Dominick Cruz rivalry, and I don't think it'll end with Uriah Faber. And, of course, you know, Uriah will probably at some point settle into more of a coaching role and really focus on just being a leader of that team. And I have no doubt in my mind that he will continue to go back and forth with Dominick Cruz just like they did at the night's post-fight press conference.
Uriah, you spoke obviously in the Octagon about having to consider your options going forward. Was that something you were thinking about prior to tonight's fight, or was that sort of just in the ring afterwards?
You know, this has been a long career, so you obviously think about things here and there, and you know, throughout time, and it's always kind of gauging how you feel in practice is the biggest thing. So I've always prided myself on being a guy that doesn't take much damage in fights, and tonight I got caught a couple of times. It's, you know, not characteristic of me, so you got to give credit to Cruz for that, but also consider, you know, myself as a guy that just turned 37 and in a tough sport. So you know, it's also consider I was coming down from 163 from this thing, so you know, if I do take another fight at 45s possibly, but I don't know what I'm gonna do right now. I want to go back and watch the fight. It's, you know, it's always kind of an instinctual fight for me, and I have to go back and watch again to see exactly what happened, because we're in there. It's like, you know, you're just going and going and going. So I'd like to go back and look at it and see, you know, how I look. Because honestly, I got myself in amazing shape for that fight. I mean, you always have bumps and bruises and little injuries in practice, but I did the things to get myself in tip-top shape. I didn't feel like fatigue was an issue, but I did get caught a couple times and got outclassed in the fight, and I don't like that, you know? I mean, I'm fighting a great fighter, but for me to be outclassed, you know, I got to assess things. So I'm going to do that. I'm not going to make any decisions. I know we have the new arena coming to Sacramento, so that's something I'll be very aware of, you know, that's kind of a dream come true to be in that thing there. So that's something to think about as well. But, you know, I love this sport. I love what I do. I've always loved fighting and combat, and I love to train hard, but I want to be at my best.
For Dominic, please, obviously a fantastic performance by you tonight. But the consensus in the early going was it seemed like maybe you were a little off, having a little trouble settling in. Were there any issues that you were dealing with, and did you feel a little bit off to start with?
I mean, I got to go back and watch the fight. Like Faber said, it's kind of a whirlwind when you're in there, but I didn't feel off. I just knew I make adjustments on instinct, and he was coming really heavy in the first round, so I pushed the pace in the first round too, and I was just adjusting. I mean, I felt fine.
For both Dom and Uriah, at the end of the fight, you stood and looked at each other for a second, and I was going to ask if it's time to bury that hatchet, but after listening to the two of you now, will you ever be able to?
Yeah, I don't mind. You know, it's been an interesting relationship throughout the years. We've been locked in PR arrangements where we've had to work as a team. We've had to, you know, share the disappointment of injuries and missed opportunities. There's been a lot of, you know, basically getting to know each other. I feel like he's grown up a lot since the original days of me thinking he was just a little punk. I think he's grown, he really has grown up a lot, and has gotten better as a fighter as well. So, you know, the truth is though, our team is full of killers, like I talked about. So there's always going to be that rivalry there. And you know, I feel like we've made up at points for like a day, and then it just goes right back to some negativity. So, who knows what's going to happen in the future, but, Dom's okay.
It's just funny listening to that. I don't know. We have. It's been a crazy roller coaster. You know, I'm glad that obviously I could come out winning and holding the belt after everything I've been through. It's been a crazy few years, and I've done really well against anybody from his team every single time. I think that I have a lot of killers at my gym too, and I think that everybody at Alliance Training Center that I work out with gets me ready to beat everybody he's ever trained himself and everybody that I've beaten. They've all helped me win. I didn't do this by myself. When I was at getting built up for the years, you know, coaching these guys, training these guys, I watched them to get better so I could come back with the eyes I needed to still be the best. Wilson Hayes, Danny Martinez, Rolando Perez, Jeremy Stevens, Matt Sales. I mean, Teco, Masio. The list goes on with the guys that I got to get me ready. Polo, that just had the fight of the century. Guy's a monster. I mean, these guys all get me ready. So it's not just me out here. You know, like I said, I don't make any percentage off any of these guys. They just help me get ready. And I love them. And that's it. I make no money off any of them. He does.
Our team is funded by our fighters. We have coaching staff, and it's a losing venture. If you want to take over, I'll hand it over gladly.
It is a losing venture for you guys against me.
It really was an incredible night of fights at UFC 199. I always hesitate to say something is the best ever, the most this, the whatever, because it's so hard to remember everything and all of MMA history and every night that you've had. But I really do think this is one of the most entertaining nights of fights from start to finish. I mean, look at all we've talked about already. Haven't even mentioned Dustin Poirier, how fantastic he looked at lightweight. This guy is the real deal at 155 pounds. Looks so much healthier now. Doesn't look so miserable on fight week, and the performances are really, really showing just how great he can be. I think he's a legitimate contender at 155 pounds. He's going to take some time off. He's got a kid on the way. Says he definitely wants to spend some time around his wife for that. And certainly that's understandable. But then he wants to get back to action. He wants to headline. He wants big fights. He looked incredible. Bobby Green. How did night like watching Bobby Green? The guy is a showman. It cost him tonight. You know, he motioned and gestured. And just as he did that, Dustin Poirier capitalized and took advantage of it. But Bobby Green putting on a show, scaring the hell out of me. When he comes in and does that leaping roll into the cage, that is scary. I feel like he's going to hurt himself. But looked fantastic there, and did Dustin Poirier. Bobby Green put on a show. He's always going to do that, and you know, he'll certainly be back for more. And we haven't even talked about it. The prelims were insane. I mean, the first fight of the night, Polo Reyes, Maestro Dong Young Kim coming in with just one of the best fights you'll ever see. Just incredible. I think it's great that it held up as fight of the night because those two dudes did it. Both guys had to go to the hospital afterwards. Precautionary reasons, sounded like everybody was okay, but that was an all-out war and just a hell of a way to start the night. The rest of the Fight Pass card was okay. You know, I did have Kevin Casey winning that fight 29-28. I think scoring the fight for Elvis Mutavchuk is crazy, so I'm a little surprised that happened. The 28-28 draw, I'm okay with that. A 10-8 in that final round, I think, is certainly understandable. I didn't have it that way, but I can understand why somebody might go that way. 28-29 going the other way, bizarre to me. Luis Enrique da Silva, I think you know why they call him Frankenstein. Dude just walks forward looking to get in that clinch. Impressive comfort behind win there from him. Jonathan Wilson was looking really good, and Luis Enrique da Silva with some slick work. Sean Strickland picking up the win over Tom Breeze. Tom Breeze, I think, still a top prospect. You heard Simon Head very high on him early in the week, and didn't necessarily pan out. It's a little too cautious, didn't pull the trigger, and Sean Strickland did just enough to win the fight. And this was the if you had to pick out one fight that was the least exciting of the night, that was it. Unfortunately for the Fight Pass crew and our man Eric Winter, it was his featured Fight Pass prelim. So imagine he wasn't too happy about that. But still, I think at the end of the Fight Pass portion of the card, we felt like things were going good. I think that Polo Reyes and Dong Young Kim fight was so good that it just carried through for everything else and really just set the tone for that Fight Pass. And then the Fox Sports prelims came on. And I mean, I could spend another hour talking about these fights. I really could. So amazing. But this night was so full of great fights and great stories. And then, of course, all the news that we had as well, taking up a lot of our time. But Brian Ortega, after getting over some opening jitters in that first round against Clay Guida, settled in and just looked phenomenal. It really did look good. Excuse me, choking there. Really did look good. Boxing was crisp. Everything was comfortable. That kid really is a talent. Benil Dariush picking up the knockout win at James Vick. My God, what a brutal finish that was. Big left hands for Benil Dariush. Bouncing back from that loss just 6 weeks ago. Incredible work there. Jessica Andrade, good Lord, looks like a real contender at 115 pounds. I got to say, never really all that impressed with her at 135. I don't mean that in a rude way, but I mean, it was obvious she was in the wrong division. Just she's tiny. But was just never really all that impressed with her. And tonight, she looked phenomenal at 115 pounds. I mean, just the speed that she was throwing her strikes, the relentless nature of it. I honestly feel like you could match her up with anybody in the division, even Joanna Jacek. Now, I'm not saying she deserves a title shot. She doesn't. But what I'm saying is, stylistically, athletically, I think she could fight anybody in that division to put on a hell of a show. I see her moving up those rankings very, very quick. And then Alex Caceres, Bruce Leroy, phenomenal win over Cole Miller. Looked incredible in the opening two rounds, just so relaxed. The striking was on point. Just looked absolutely fantastic. Cole Miller battling back in that third and final round, nearly getting a couple of submissions. Alex Caceres showing great patience and work and not panicking in those tough spots, and was able to gut it out, survive that third and final round, and pick up a unanimous decision win. I thought that was a great performance by Bruce Leroy, stepping in on short notice and just looked phenomenal. So UFC 199, just a great card from top to bottom. One that, as Adam Hill said earlier, did surprise. I think maybe we came in with lowered expectations or not really all that fired up about it. I mean, on paper, it looked like some good fights, but it just delivered in a huge way. So fun night, UFC 199. Hopefully you caught it all. If you didn't, go back and watch it because it was a great night of fights. Listen, it's damn near 6 o'clock in the morning. I haven't been to sleep yet. I'm tired. I need to get some sleep before I go home. Fortunately, I'm flying and not driving back to Las Vegas and spending an afternoon at home with my family. So I am looking forward to that. And for that reason, I'm going to pack things up right here. Let me just say thank you to everybody for checking us out. As I always say, follow us on social media. You know, give us those ratings and reviews on iTunes. Subscribe. Do all that good stuff if you can. But we don't need to run through all that. Let me just say, thanks for listening.